Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. For those of you joining in, I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Mr. Bruce Whitehurst, President and CEO of the Virginia Bankers Association. Following a 10-year career in retail and commercial banking, Bruce joined the Virginia Bankers Association in 1993, its 100th anniversary year. He has served as President and Chief Executive Officer of the Association since 2007 and was previously an Executive Vice President. While at the VBA, Bruce has worked with member banks in a variety of areas, which include government relations, education and training, and financial literacy, and partnering with banks in a number of innovative ways to help them enter new lines of businesses. He also speaks about and on behalf of the industry on a regular basis. As a banking industry advocate, Bruce is active at the national level. He served on the American Bankers Association Regulatory Reform Task Force during the 2008-2009 financial crisis and served as an ABA board member and chairman of the Alliance of State Bankers Association in 2012 and 2013. He has also served on the ABA Community Bankers Council and the ABA Government Relations Council. Committed to serving his community, Bruce is a director of and has chaired United Methodist Family Services in Richmond, Virginia, and the Virginia Council of Economic Education. He also serves on the Board of Trustees at Ferrum College. Bruce received his Bachelor of Arts degree from the College of William and Mary, his MBA from the University of Richmond, and is a graduate of the Virginia Banker School of Bank Management. Bruce, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Daniel. Glad to be here.
Bruce, before we really get into our topics for the day, I always like to give our guests a chance to kind of introduce how they got into the banking industry. So, Bruce, where did you really get your start in the financial world?
Well, as with so many people, your career isn't necessarily what you planned for as much as where you ended up. In my case, when I was a freshman in college, I was very blessed that my parents were able to put my brother, my sister, and me all through college. But they said, that's it. If you want things like a car and a social life, you're going to have to get a job. So in the spring of my freshman year of college, I got a job as a part-time teller at a bank and stayed in that role for the rest of my college years, which gave me an opportunity to join the bank full-time, first as a management trainee, then a branch manager, then a commercial lender. And so I was at that bank for a total of 10 years, as you just mentioned. And then I had this wonderful opportunity to join the VBA 30 years ago and to really become an advocate for the industry and also a partner with all of our member banks here in Virginia. So it's been a wonderful career with only two job changes since I was 18 years old.
Well, that's really nice that you've only had the two different job changes. I haven't had to move around too much then.
Yeah.
That's great that you've had some time in the retail. I mean, some of the people we have on haven't had a ton of experience in the retail, so it's nice to really hear from someone that has been in the house and knows what it's like to work with the customer face-to-face and trying to get the products and sales and everything.
Yes.
Indeed. Well, that actually leads perfectly into kind of the topics that we were going to discuss today about talent and acquiring talent in the branch. So far as attracting talent to the banking industry, it's always been a concern, especially with the changing in generations between who's been in banking and who's coming into banking. What kind of programs have you seen or what advice would you like to give to banks listening when it comes to really attracting talents to the banks?
Well, Daniel, you're right. That is a perennial top issue that bankers identify is how are we going to continue to attract top talent to the industry? And I think it's safe to say that the majority of people who enter the banking industry didn't grow up thinking, I want to be a banker, right? Like with so many different professions, unless maybe it was in the family already or that kind of thing. So we have gotten more intentional, the VBA, in partnership with our member banks in recent years to try to figure out how do we open up the banking industry as a possibility for young people to consider as a career and support young people in the process. And so we developed actually in the early 1990s, what we call the Bank Day Scholarship Program This is a day in March of every year when we have high school seniors shadow in banks all across Virginia. And in recent years, that we're talking about between 450 and 500 high school seniors that spend a day in a bank learning what a bank is all about and also how invested banks are in the communities they serve. Then we offer every student a chance to write an essay about what they learned about banking. And we have a blind judging process supported by our Emerging Bank Leaders Division to award a total of $26,000 in college scholarships or scholarships for education beyond high school, whatever it may be. That's been a great program. We built on top of that a few years ago a summer internship program at the college level so that as banks in Virginia bring on students to be summer interns, the VBA has put what I call an industry wrapper around the internship experience at that bank. We bring all the interns from various banks together. Most years it's somewhere between 30 and 40 interns. Bring them together twice during the summer, expose them to bankers who are active with the VBA and talk about why they chose banking as a career, how they got into banking, why it remains their chosen profession, and give them some skills training, have HR professionals talk with them about how to build your resume and interview, and really try to give them some very practical career skills along the way. We just last year added a community college fellows program where we provide scholarships for underrepresented community college students. And again, through the experience, expose them to banking. And then we have a real focus with, particularly with our Emerging Bank Leaders Division, on careers in banking and talking in schools, talking about careers in banking as much as we can. So those are just some of the examples, but our focus got very clear when we decided that the best way to build the future workforce for banking with an eye on diversity was to do so through outreach at the high school and college levels.
And that's fantastic. I think that's great because so many of, as you say, so many of the generation coming in, they just don't even think of banking as something to do. I mean, you yourself shared your experience of kind of how you fell into banking. And I think that's a pretty common occurrence throughout the industry is people kind of just stumble into the job and then ends up taking them on into the future.
That's right.
So just kind of for my own curiosity, what kind of experiences are you seeing these interns or these shadowers, what kind of experiences are they having in the branch? Like, are they working just purely on the branch on like the sales floor? Or are you seeing them more in like the back office style of environments?
You know, what's cool, Daniel, is that, you know, we suggest a schedule for how banks may want to have the intern experience play out for the summer. And a lot of the banks do just that. And that means exposing them to various departments. You know, sure, put them on the teller line and show them what it means to work in a branch and do face-to-face customer service, but also expose them to operations, to marketing, and to all kinds of aspects of banking, which is another great way, by the way, to open up that, hey, I may be an IT major in college, but guess what? There's a lot of IT jobs in banking. It's not just about being a retail banker or a commercial lender, for example. So a lot of banks are doing that to really help provide that more comprehensive exposure to the industry. And we think that's wonderful.
Yeah, that really truly is. And that actually goes right hand in hand with kind of the next topic that I wanted to chat with you about. And that's talent retention and development. I mean, a key point of the banking industry is getting talent into the industry. But then the next step naturally is how do you develop that talent once it's there? How do you retain that talent once that it's there? What kind of trends are you seeing regarding retaining and developing existing talent?
Well, interestingly, so we, and this could be said of all of our peer state bankers associations across the country, we're very involved in training, professional development and training for bank employees in Virginia. And we have what we call the leadership continuum. And we'd like to think of the fact that the VBA could be a partner to banks to help them from attracting new people into the industry all the way until the last professional development event that might be valuable and worthwhile before someone retires. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, specifically focus on the leadership side. We have a lot of conferences and training sessions on functional things around banking, compliance, obviously, credit, risk, technology, CFO conference, all kinds of things like that. But we, in the leadership side, we've seen more demand in the last couple of years than I think we've ever seen before, which says something about the stakes being higher, I believe, Daniel, than they've ever been in terms of the fact that when we bring somebody in, we need to work on all of their professional skills, not just teaching them how to be a lender or a compliance officer or whatever. So we have a management development program, 5-month program for early career bankers or those who maybe are just in the process of making the first big step in their career. We have our 3-year School of Bank Management, as so many state associations do, where bankers come for a week, a year in residency and then write home study problem papers in between. And then we have an Executive Leadership Institute, which is to help you when you're in or about to be at the C-suite or senior management in banks. And one of the really cool things for us at the VBA to see, Daniel, is to connect some dots. When we see the class of summer interns, and it includes some students who were in the Bank Day scholarship program a summer or two earlier, that's a pretty cool thing. And then when we see summer interns go on to work full time in banks, which just in the last 5 years, we've seen 30. We know of 30 college students who interned at a bank and are now working full time at the
bank. That's awesome.
We see some of them come into some of our leadership development programs, and we see that it's actually working. You know, the work that we do with our banks to attract more young people to consider banking careers is working. It's a really cool payoff.
So let me ask you a little bit then, because obviously you're seeing fruits from your success, as you were just saying. So you're seeing fruits from your labors. What this leadership program, you mentioned that, did you have it available for different levels? What kind of things are covered in this leadership program? So if I was investigating, if I was looking into it, like why would I want to do it? Like what value is it going to give me?
Yeah. So the more lower level or entry level program, the management development program, you know, how some of these graduate schools that offer MBAs now offer a mini MBA where you go and you, for a shorter period of time, you take some classes and you sort of get a taste of what it would be like to get an MBA degree. MDP maybe could be characterized as a mini bank school for us because it's pretty comprehensive. It talks about a bank's, how banks operate, balance sheet, P&L, lending, asset liability management. What the heck is that? We want them to understand what the ALCO committee does in a bank, the role of compliance, but also strategic planning and leadership skills and getting to know yourself as a person and how you communicate with others. So it's a very balanced mix of banking specific as well as personal professional skills development.
That's great, because initially I was thinking it was like centrally focus on leadership and everything. So the fact that these other items are included there really, I think, could be a huge benefit to the banks as a whole, because it's not just leadership skills that are being developed. It's also like how to bank and the process of banking and what the industry is like. That's great. The third question, again, fits right in with these topics, is diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI. I mean, like, this has been a huge focus in the industry for a while, but it's even getting more attention now. And it's really become a focus with, like, regulators recently. What's happening with this? What's going on with DEI?
Yes. Well, the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion is not a new idea. It's always been important. It's gained significance and focus in the last few years. Back in 2019, we first set up a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council with the idea that we did need to bring more focus and that more diverse future leadership in banking would be about what we with our banks, what our banks did and what we did in partnership with our banks to help, again, back to what I was saying earlier, attract more younger people and more diverse candidates than ever before to consider banking careers, and then to bring tools to develop them as they went along. The DEI Council gave us even more focus on the things that banks should be doing internally to ensure inclusion, to ensure that every employee felt a part of that team of bank employees, and to do what bankers tend to do in really kind of amazing ways, share with each other their successes, their best mm-hmm. practices, and learn from each other in terms of what's going. In the case of the way we started, the larger banks that are members of the VBA were already more focused on diversity and inclusion than maybe some of the smaller banks. And of course, they were able to have maybe dedicated resources more readily as well. So their ability and willingness to participate in this knowledge transfer was really cool to see. That took us to, starting in 2020, we and the American Bankers Association became the lead partners in a national annual DEI summit that mm-hmm. initially was going to be in person, and then a little pandemic came along and it became a half day virtual event that reaches diversity officers, but also bank CEOs, all kinds mm-hmm. of bankers in 42 or 43 states every year wow. now as a virtual event. There's no way we could replicate that mm-hmm. as an in-person event. But the need to continue a focus on DEI is clear. The need to keep momentum going. There was so much intense focus on this topic in 2020 after the George Floyd killing mm-hmm. That it's hard to maintain that level of intensity, but you don't want to just say, we have now checked a box and we're mm-hmm. going to move on. It needs to be a part of every company's operation, right? So from a regulatory standpoint, Daniel, there have been some suggestions in Congress around mandating certain activities, mandating reporting. And as a general rule, we tend to not favor mandates because a lot of times, in my experience, mandates lead to unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. Maybe it becomes more about the reporting and the compliance than about, are you actually doing what you ought to be doing? And so yeah. a key part of our industry advocacy with and on behalf of our banks is to talk with legislators and regulators on a regular basis about all the great things that are happening organically and voluntarily because it's the right thing to do. It's the smart thing to do from a business standpoint to focus on diversity, equity, inclusion. And therefore, perhaps we don't need to talk about mandates because we see an industry that has fully embraced and leaned into DE&I.
So you mentioned that part of this council that VBA established was really looking at some of the best practices and procedures that a bank can put into place. What are some of those best practices and procedures that you're seeing banks put into place that are really making a difference, that are kind of changing the way that they're approaching things?
Well, to the banks that have a greater number of employees, so the larger banks, mm-hmm. I think if you were talking to a DEI professional from one of the larger banks, they would talk with you about affinity or affiliation groups. If you are a military veteran and you work at this bank, then there's a group that convenes a peer group of military veterans. There might be a group for Asian Americans, for Black employees, et cetera. And those are very important because they say you matter and your voice matters to this company. If you're a smaller bank, then you may not have the numbers or the demographics to do it exactly that way. But what we've seen as a significant best practice is town halls, all employee town halls, listening sessions in smaller groups and larger groups, a more intentional focus around hiring practices than ever before. and more focus on our culture. Is our culture not only inclusive, but also welcoming? You know, do you feel actually that we want you to be a part of this organization, no matter your background?
So would you say that DEI is that just an HR concern, or is that should be a concern kind of throughout all the management levels of the bank?
It should be just a part of a management discussion. Anytime you're talking about people, which is the number one way you succeed mm-hmm. or don't succeed, right, as a company.
Right.
So DEI ought to just be just a part of the, it shouldn't be necessarily, as I say, it's not a let's check the box. It's how are we doing against our own standards to which we've agreed to hold ourselves accountable? And again, not right. those imposed upon us, but those that we hold ourselves accountable to.
Goes back to the mandated versus the best practices the bank should just be engaging with to begin with. I love the concept that you mentioned there, the concept of having like a town hall or just like having open dialogue and open conversation about it as with the bank as a whole. I mean, obviously that's more difficult for a larger financial institution to do than maybe a smaller financial institution per se, but the larger financial institutions realistically already have elements in place to address these kind of needs and concerns. So I really like that concept. Thank you.
I certainly do.
So we are kind of running out of time, but I want to give you the chance and opportunity to really speak about something if something comes up. If you could give banks just one piece of advice, so from your experience, from your time in the industry and the multiple different positions you've taken in, what would that one piece of advice be?
Great. And one last comment on DEI, Daniel, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were asking about, you know, should it be the focus of HR or broader? It should be yes. In other words, more and more banks are adding a person who owns DEI. That could mm-hmm. be within the HR department or could be elsewhere within the C-suite, but it has to be executive level. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that person handles that. That means that person makes sure we all are focused mm-hmm. on DEI. So it's a yes and, not a yes or. In terms of any advice that I don't feel qualified to give to banks, with a lot of leadership experience in a more general way, I would say that it's always a good idea for leaders to identify or seek out and identify pain points within their organization. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that they can be seen to be addressing and resolving those pain points, I think that really pays huge dividends in culture and employee morale.
Give me an example of what you mean, pain point.
Okay. We have an employee on our team who's clearly not carrying his or her weight. And a lot of times the path of least resistance is to just ignore it and hope the person maybe mm-hmm. will ultimately go find another job. Lacking the lack of paying attention to that, though, could work against the morale mm-hmm. of the high performers on that team who feel like they're always having to carry this other person's weight. So if that situation is a pain point, don't ignore it, address it. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. Address it. And then I think you'll find that you'll be glad you did.
Yeah, yep, I completely agree. That's great advice. That's fantastic advice. Well, Bruce, we really appreciate you joining us for our podcast today. Really kind of getting to talk to you about talent acquisition and development. I mean, such an important part of the banking industry as a whole, and just having diversity throughout the bank and making that a community discussion versus just an individual discussion of having one person responsible for it. So thank you very much for joining us on today's show. And for the rest of you joining in, that's Banking Matters.